welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Rachel.
It's a big time for politics, both in the kind of world of COVID and in the other, I guess, existential crisis of our time, which is climate change, over in Europe with COP26 at the moment. Let's start with what's happening here in Aotearoa, though. We have heard that provisionally we will be moving here in Tāmaki Makaurau into Alert Level 3, Step 2, as of midnight on Tuesday, if everything tracks as the government is expecting it to. This has been, as most, I think, Alert Level decisions taken politically in a lot of different ways. What are some of your, I guess, first impressions of what this move is going to mean and how it's been received by various parties at this point?
Well, you know, it opens up to 25 people from multiple bubbles and retail, but not pubs and restaurants for sit-down service and so on. And there's supposed to be 2 metres and masks. But, I mean, what we can see so far is that the retail community in Auckland seems to be pleased for the most part, but we're kind of dependent on anecdotal reporting from media outlets to know. We don't know whether that's widespread, because we know some small businesses may find it challenging to kind of do the policing of not filling their shops up and so on. And we're not really sure yet whether everybody is going to opt in to suddenly going out of their homes and removing themselves from the click and collect or the delivery options into stores. So I think there's still, it's a balancing act, because there's a degree of nervousness and worry that this is based on, if you like, a sort of a middle-class desire from the double backs who are feeling, you know, okay about being ready to step out. To those who are compromised because of underlying health conditions, you know, communities that aren't, you know, feeling secure in the vaccination status. So the government made a call, but it's not necessarily a science-based call anymore. It's definitely much more about politics. And it's complicated by the fact that Auckland's border remains hard, and they've now got this extra pressure because they put themselves out there yesterday saying things like, oh, only those with a double vax certificate and a negative COVID test will be able to go outside of Auckland on their summer holiday. So we've moved from sort of just dealing with this step two, alert three, to, oh my gosh, summer holidays, how are students going to get home? What is going on here?
So we have seen, I guess, some positive reporting that we did see last week was that while we're seeing case numbers rise, we're not necessarily seeing hospitalisations and the very severe end of what can happen when you catch COVID sort of rising at the same rate. And that is to do with our sort of positive vaccination steps at the moment. But yes, as you say, we've also seen a shift into this, what it's going to look like when we move from this current alert level setting into the traffic light frame. Work. And I think that there is perhaps some tensions between those two systems that are starting to crunch a little bit in different facets of the community, and we're seeing that maybe come to the front with what we're going to be moving into next week, provisionally, of course. Do you think that there is enough messaging around this particular transition period to communicate effectively to the public, but also to things like the business community, about the ways in which these two modes, the alert level system and the traffic light framework, are going to differ?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the traffic light system is quite complex, and the step down process has also been complex. I think at the moment people are working on a need-to-know basis in terms of, okay, next week we get to this, what does that mean for me and my community? I'm not sure how businesses need more surety than that. And, you know, it feels like the government's messaging changes fairly often in this, you know, because COVID is a complex health issue. And so maybe they can't sort of put one message out and stick with that, because there seems to be a lot of change. And I would also just say, like, they are going to have to think about, while there's been this, you know, yes, we've kept people out of hospitals, we know that overnight somebody with COVID died in their home alone, and that there are, while keeping people out of hospital is great and keeping them out of MIQ is good, they need wraparound services to support people who are doing that hardcore self-isolation with a virus at home, quite often alone, and without contact. And so yes, there are some good news stories, but by opening up and moving to step two and then into the traffic light system, they're going to have these extra services because the virus won't be eliminated by that time.
Now, if we do get time, I want to come back and have a little bit more of a chat about what this is all going to mean for students. But I think we should talk a little bit about COP26, because we've seen some big moves over in that space. New Zealand's sort of policies around climate change have actually been quite criticised in the last couple of weeks as not going far enough or being perhaps more on paper, looking very good, in practice not necessarily achieving that much. Also, we've seen some very tense relations between Australia and France around climate change as well. What are some of the big things that you've got your eye on at the moment, Jennifer?
Well, I think the consensus within New Zealand is that setting up the Climate Change Commission and having that independent body and setting up, you know, the various mechanisms for moving to carbon zero have been good, but it's been too slow in terms of implementation and then deconstructing old slack ways of doing things and speeding it up and getting that sense of urgency on the ground. And so COP26 saw world leaders sign up, 80 world leaders sign up to delivering on a global methane pledge, which is going to estimated to reduce warming by at least 0.2 degrees Celsius by 2050. We need to get to 1.5 degrees Celsius reduction. But and New Zealand joined up with this, and methane is one of our big problems because it's a short-term gas, but it's really bad in terms of emissions. And so we need to be doing something. And I don't think New Zealand, especially their farming community, expected James Shaw to sort of sign up and agree to this. And so we see the farming sector already going, whoa, this is not what we thought would happen, because it involves a 30% reduction in methane in the next 10 years rather than the 10% I think that was promised. So James Shaw has said we're going to find ways to do this. I think the challenge is in the way he's messaging it, which is he's talking about doing it collectively. And when he uses that term, he means globally. So while we might not get ours down by 30%. And I think that's concerning for those in the community in New Zealand who would like to see a more rapid reduction. And we know that there's consultation going on emissions and so on now. But the plan, the emissions reduction plan, isn't going to be dropped in New Zealand until May next year. So we already lose 6 months of really important time before 2030 to get this really moving.
Yes, yeah, and it's a complicated process, obviously. COVID seems to take up a lot of people's mental space at the moment, but, you know, climate change isn't going away anytime soon. It's going to be a very interesting conversation to keep following. I do want to hear a little bit about what's happening with Australia and France, though, because this is quite an interesting and strange part of this whole COP26 moment. What's going on over there, Jennifer?
Well, Australia signed up with the UK and the US, and New Zealand didn't, and nor did Canada, in this thing called AUKUS, which is the strategic framework for the region, for the Indo-Pacific region. It involved Australia dumping an agreement to buy French submarines for the purchase of American submarines. But there's been this whole business of, like, oh, nobody told the French, you know, Macron didn't know. So lots of sort of political, diplomatic fallout. But then at the COP26, Australia refused virtually to sign on to very much at all. They were really kind of, this is a domestic policy position for the Conservative government there, that they won't agree to the methane reduction target. They're really not interested in speeding up their carbon emission reduction over time. And people are starting to wonder how much the Prime Minister of Australia is using the sort of friction with France to overshadow the fact that Australia is turning itself into a global laggard, perhaps even worse than New Zealand, in terms of developed countries moving on this. Basically the media is saying Morrison is doing this thing where he's got an election coming up, mm-hmm. probably sometime early next year, and he's really just focusing on domestic and trying to and not really worrying about what international politics is going to, what fallout there will be from this ongoing challenge with France. And, you know, they've had the G7, the G20 and COP, and Australia's just been holding its line on, no, we're not signing up to these targets, mm. and we don't care about summary. So it's just interesting, I think, from a New Zealand perspective, that when Australia decides to play diplomatic hardball with a country, it's not just with New Zealand. Mm. They're quite happy to go to diplomatic war with France as well.
It's a very interesting one to follow there, and I'm sure we'll be able to come back to it in a couple of weeks' time because COP is ongoing at the moment. But thank you so much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. It's always great to have you on the show. Hope you have a lovely rest of your Thursday, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Rachel. You have a great day too.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with